Welcome to episode 26. I am Tammy. It's great to have you here. I want to start out by thanking all of you listeners. This podcast now has, at the time of this recording, 1,400 plays and an established audience of 45. I know a lot of people say that, oh, you shouldn't look at the plays, you know, all that kind of stuff, but bullshit. It's exciting to me, a person who is, you know, just a person, right? Just the idea that even if all those countries I list, only one person from that country listened, goddamn, I'm happy. It just, somebody somewhere in Bahrain listen to my podcast, even for just a couple seconds. Thank you anyway. And that's awesome. I mean, I don't know, just the idea that it's getting out there to everybody is just so amazing to me. It's exciting that anybody's listening. As a reminder also, I just want to say the website is up and running, so go visit womencommittingcrimes.com. All the episodes are there, as well as pictures, pages for suggestions, a page listing all the women I plan on talking about in a future podcast. I strike out the ones that, you know, that were on the list that I have already done. Also, I'm going to start doing bonus episodes. I was originally going to do them in May, but that's not going to happen because... oh, dear Lord. Right now, it's the end of the school year, and with testing and all that shit, holy crap, right? And on top of that, my husband and I are putting on an escape room for our son for his 16th birthday this month, so it's really crazy around here. But that's cool, right? I'll have time in June, right? So then the bonus episodes will come out there. But here's the catch. You have to follow the website to listen to the bonus episodes. I'm not going to upload them to Anchor. I'm not going to upload them to any other podcaster, right? They're not going on Women Committing Crimes Facebook. They're not going on Twitter, none of that stuff. You can only get them from the website. Now, here's the deal. I was going to do that at Secret Spy Sister. Still not sold on that. So I'm wondering if maybe I just make the bonus episodes the spies. There's a lot of fucking women spies out there, and they are so... I really kind of want to talk about them. So I think instead of having bonus episodes and the spy episodes, I'm just going to make them the bonus episodes of the spy. And I'm still going to call it Secret Spy Sisters. Fuck it. You know what? Until somebody comes and says, you know what? That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. I'm going to keep it that way. Because nothing else is popping in my head. Anyway. So you'll have to get that from the website. I'm not going to make it to where you have to support the podcast to listen. I don't think that's fair just yet. You know, I'm not at that part. I'm not there yet as far as, like, you know, being able to demand that kind of thing. I just want you to listen. I really do. And I really want you to spread the word to everybody about this podcast. Eventually I am going to monetize the website. However, you know, you can go to anchor.fm/Elizabeth-Chase, and you can support through Anchor. There is a button on that. So if you ever see that, you know, like if you're on the Facebook group or you're on Twitter, you can go to, it takes you to Anchor, and then you can support that way too. I do want to do a shout out. So I finally had a review, like a real review, and I'm so excited about this, okay? So I want to do a shout out before we get started on the Vampire Barcelona. I want to do a shout out to Tay Tay Claire, who gave me a review on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, right? This person posted this rating on April 15th, 2021, so just last month, almost exactly 1 month from today. Gave me 1 star, said it was awful, fine. So I'm going to read you exactly what this person wrote. I'm going to quote them, right? Quote, needs a lot of improvements. It's been around long enough that it should be better by now. Sorry, girl. End quote. All right, now, you're saying bad review. Why are you so excited? Maybe it's a bad review, but I'm not so sure, and here's my questions. While I appreciate the fact that Tay Tay Claire evidently listened at least more than once, that's fucking cool, I'm a bit disappointed, okay, that this person was not more constructive with their criticism. What parts of the podcast, Tay Tay, do you think are bad? In what ways should it be improved? Which episodes did you listen to? You know, do you need more music, which I'm working on, right? The last one I did, I had some Italian music and stuff. I liked it. I think it made it pop, made it sparkle. So I'm gonna do that again today, with a different person. But so, Tay Tay, I still thank you for listening. I really do, and I thank you for taking the time to write that review. That does make a difference. It really does. I appreciate it. Come back and listen some other time if you would, right? But I'm right now in this doing this, I'm of the cliche opinion that there's no bad press. So if you're curious as to why Tay-Tay Claire said that, God, you know, I'm hoping somebody's curious enough to listen, right? Fantastic. All right, well, enough about that. I do want to say one last thing before we get on again to Enriqueta Marti. I apologize for not uploading this yesterday. This last Mother's Day, right? That was just a couple days ago. I hurt my back. It's embarrassing, right? But, you know, I had done gardening and I had done, you know, house cleaning and all that, right? And then I went to go get the laundry out of the dryer and snap! Motherfucker, it is so painful. I can't describe the pain. It's just, if you've ever had like a slip disc or whatever, you know what I'm talking about, and I am crying with you in solidarity. This happened to me like 15 years ago, but it was worse this time. Probably because I'm 15 years older. Anyway, so I just want to apologize it didn't come out yesterday. Happier to do it today, right? So here we go. Enriqueta Marti, the Vampire Barcelona, was born in 1868 in Saint Feliu de Llobregat. Forgive my Spanish. Again, not what I learned in middle school, right? But I'm gonna slug my way through it, and I apologize, right? Correct me, please. Saint Feliu is located in the valley of the river Llobregat, which is in the province of Barcelona. It is a small town, only 4.6 square miles, and has a population today of 44,474. Before Enriqueta was born, the Bertrand Textile Factory moved into Saint Feliu. There is not any information I could find about her parents or about her childhood, none of that shit, her early life, but maybe her father worked in the factory? You know, that's possible, right? A railway line linking Barcelona and I think it's Villafranca, had been built in 1855, which had a station in Saint Feliu. This was probably the train Enriqueta took when she moved to Barcelona in 1888. That's like the next place where it picks up her life. Barcelona is a beautiful city located in the autonomous community of Catalonia. All right, so I'm going to quote Wikipedia here. Yeah, not the best source, but not the worst when it comes to this kind of stuff, right? And I wasn't sure what an autonomous community meant. So I'm going to read to you what it says it is, and then I'm going to give you what I think it is, and then, you know, maybe you can correct me. All right, so quote, in Spain, an autonomous community is a first-level political and administrative decision created in accordance with the Spanish Constitution of 1978, with the aim of guaranteeing limited autonomy of the nationalities and regions that make up Spain. Okay, so those autonomous communities are Spanish, Basque, Catalan, Galician, Occitan, Aragonese, and Asturian. So here's my kind of take on this, is that it's kind of like Spain has an overall, you know, umbrella, and then these fit under that. Almost, I want to say like the United States in a way, right? Almost like it's the United States of Spain. But here's the thing about those areas. A lot of them have their own language, right? Basque, for sure. It's a dying language, unfortunately, but it does have its own language. These have their own cultures, that kind of stuff. I'm not saying that that doesn't happen in the United States either. Cajun is a thing, right? That's the kind of how I look at it. So like different cultural regions, right, with under the umbrella of Spain, which is kind of cool. And Barcelona has an area of about 2,983 miles, with a population today of 5,609,350. So when Enriqueta moved there, she was 20 years old, right, in 1888, I think it said, and she worked as a maidservant and a nanny. That's a common thing for young women to do, especially right before the turn of the 20th century. Like a lot of young girls at that time, though, she also eventually became a prostitute, but at an upscale brothel. For more historical context here, she is working in a high-class brothel when Barcelona was hosting the World's Fair. The World's Fair was in Barcelona twice. The first time was this in 1888. It went from April 8th to December 19th, 1888, and then it hosted again in 1929, interestingly enough. The World's Fair was a large international exhibition designed to showcase the achievements of different nations. So with 30 countries being represented, I'm sure there were more people than usual in Barcelona, right? Lots of tourists and stuff that year. So I imagine that Enriqueta would have probably made some good money. Looking at her picture, she's not an unattractive person, you know? So not that that matters sometimes when it comes to brothels, but in this case, you know. So she would have probably made some good money during the World's Fair time period as a prostitute. Spain entered the Spanish-American War with the United States, which caused a severe, and I'm not going to go into the Spanish-American War because that, we'll maybe save that for another time. I mean, it was just a war between Spain and the United States. Yeah, I'll just leave it at that. anyway, it caused, well, gosh, I really kind of want to touch on it. Not that it's that big of a deal. It's because I'm a history teacher. So Spain and America had been, you know, tough guying it for a while. There's a whole argument about Cuba because Cuba was a Spanish colony for a while, just like a lot of things were. This is where yellow journalism definitely plays a role in a war, because the USS Maine exploded, which later on, of course, you know, a century later or whatever, we know for sure that it was a boiler unit under there. But journalists at the time, we can hate the media since the beginning. And if you listen to my Patty Hearst, you'll understand, because that's where this comes in too. Oh, look at that full circle bullshit, right? Okay, hey, with William Randolph Hearst. So the newspapers took this and said that Spain had blown up the USS Maine, the ship, the Maine, right? So this international incident starts. Eventually, America declares war on Spain. You know, they fight it out. And the reason why this is like such a big deal is because Spain loses some of its holdings. Spain, you know, had been limping along as an imperial country for a while now, you know, ever since the British Empire kind of, you know, pushed them out of the way after exploration and shit. So after the Spanish-American War, Spain loses some of its holdings and the United States gains the Philippines, Guam, Cuba, not Cuba necessarily as a colonial thing, but what it really does for the United States is it puts it on the world stage as an imperial country, because now it has holdings on the opposite side of the world, which it didn't before. It only had things right around home in the Western Hemisphere. So that's really why the Spanish-American War for the United States is a big deal. And it kind of is for Spain too, because they lost some stuff. It didn't last very long. You know, again, just a couple months, right? Not even a year. But for our story, for this, you know, I mean to digress, so I'm not going to even say I'm sorry. But anyway, so for our story here, though, you know, there's an economic slump in Barcelona, right, because of the Spanish-American War. However, Enriqueta, still appeared to be somewhat of a successful prostitute. 3 years before the Spanish-American War in 1895, because the Spanish-American War was 1898, she had married Juan Pujalo. He was an artist. I couldn't find anything else about him. I couldn't even find any art about him. So if you know anything, if you're in Spain, if you are anywhere and you know anything about this artist, I'd love to see what kind of artwork he did. But she continued to be a successful prostitute at the same time that she was married. So their marriage was not very stable. It was on again, off again. She refused to stop being a prostitute. And again, you know, during the Spanish-American War, right? So this caused them to eventually, by 1907, they dissolved their marriage. They divorced. They were done. And importantly for this story also, they had no children. Before her marriage finally ended in 1907, in about the year 1900, Enriqueta rented a small apartment in the Barrio Chino. There, she ran her own brothel and would dress up as a beggar woman, stand in bread lines, and supposedly kidnap children and force them into prostitution. Now, there's one for sure that they know of. The girl was 17, but it's rumored that there were many others. And then at night, she would dress up and she would hobnob with the wealthy at like a casino and an opera house, that kind of stuff. So She hobnobs with the wealthy women, in particular, because she is selling them potions. She's selling them potions, beauty products, elixirs, creams, etc. She claimed that they were a cure, or at least preventative against tuberculosis, which we'll touch on again in just a second here. And that also the things that were in it, which we'll talk about later, would keep a woman wrinkle-free, keep her young-looking. Tuberculosis, I think we talked about this before, and I don't remember which episode it would have been in, though. Tuberculosis is a potentially serious infectious bacterial disease of the lungs. I say potential because these days there is a vaccination as well as like lots of different treatment because they know about it. Back then, though, tuberculosis was highly feared, especially in Europe. It killed a lot of people at the turn of the 20th century in Europe. TB, gosh, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that, you know, like in the previous century, in the 19th century, that killed like Doc Holliday, lots of famous people had consumption or tuberculosis. This is also before any kind of regulations, not just in the United States, but around the world, for products claiming to do what they, you know, there's always those elixirs that claim to cure everything. Half of them were just cocaine, you know, all kinds of laudanum drugs, that kind of shit, right? So the stuff that she puts in this, so she told the upper class women that what would keep them young and stuff were the blood, fat, and bones of children. So that's what's in her potions. Well, in 1909, her brothel was raided during Tragic Week. Of course, I have to digress with Tragic Week because I didn't know about this part. Tragic Week was the last week of July 1909. This was violent clashes between the Spanish army and anarchist socialists and other groups. The premier, okay, the Spain still has a king, King Alfonso, I think, the 13th. But they also have a premier who pretty much, you know, runs the country. Kind of like England, right, has the queen, but also has the prime minister. So the premier, I guess, would be maybe an equivalent to the prime minister. So the premier, Antonio Mara, called up reserve troops to be sent as reinforcements when Spain was going to Morocco and renewing its colonial activities. Uh-huh. Remember, they're only like 8 miles apart across the Strait of Gibraltar, so... Well, anyway, those troops that he was trying to recall had already served, and they were done. They had been done serving like 6 years prior to this, right? So he's recalling people who had been retired from the military service for 6 years, and most of them didn't want to go, and the rich ones could actually pay to have somebody else go for them or just not to go at all, which kind of is not fair, right? And, you know, but those that were poor that had to fight really had no interest in this because what Spain is trying to do by colonizing Morocco is actually it's mining companies that are going in and, of course, exploiting the resources of their colony because that's how colonialism works. And these reservists or these people that they were trying to call up from the reserves or whatever were not interested in going there to force Morocco to let these mining companies do what they wanted to do, all right? So really it comes down to, what the Tragic Week comes down to is kind of like a class war. The have-nots against the middle and upper classes, right? A union called the Solidaridad Obrera called for a general strike against the recall of these reservists. Workers occupied central Barcelona, halting trains and overturning trams. Street fighting broke out, as well as riots and worker strikes were all over the city. Riots and worker strikes. The rioters, anarchists, etc., also considered the Roman Catholic Church part of the corrupted middle and upper class because they were quite wealthy, right? So they burned down convents and churches. The army put up barricades, and Antonio Mara, the premier, declared martial law and brought in troops from other provinces, which ended the Tragic Week. By that time, he didn't trust the soldiers and the police forces that were in Barcelona. He felt they were sympathizers with the anarchists and that union and so on. So that's why he brought them in from other provinces. When it was all over, hundreds were killed. And King Alfonso the 13th, dismissed and replaced Mara, which, you know, not a bad thing. So during that mess, Enriqueta's tiny brothel in her apartment had been raided. She was arrested for procuring children supposedly as young as 3 for prostitution for rich clients. She was released without a trial because a wealthy client had happened to be there in her apartment when it was busted, and kind of pretty much made everything disappear, right? The wealthy client was never named. Whenever there's a wealthy client, sometimes all that stuff can go away. So right here, though, I want to take a midway break. I didn't last time, and I do this time because these things are important. So this podcast is brought to you by the podcast This Is Why You're Wrong with Stephen Everett, John DeBruin, and Alex Alcantar. In their podcast, they make lists about everything. Like this last week was top 10 aquatic animals, and then the week before that was top 10 Pop-Tarts, which is really kind of interesting to me because shit, if I knew that there were more than 10 or that there were at least 10 Pop-Tarts. I really didn't. I'll be honest, I'm not a huge Pop-Tart fan. But, you know, hey, if you didn't know either, listen to it, right? They argue about why their list is superior. And it was also an inspiration for this podcast with their episode about top 10 coolest bad guys. It was so much fun being on that one. I was on that episode. And then it's just fun to listen to. I love their arguments. I love their lists. Check it out on Spotify, and wherever else you get your podcast. Give them 5 stars on iTunes. Compare your own list to theirs. You know, they might surprise you. Maybe their number one aquatic animal is not the same as yours. It says animals, so I don't think it's discerning mammals versus like fish, right? So it could be like whales as well as sharks, right? So anyway, I also want to thank Byron Alexander for allowing me to use his music at the beginning and end of this podcast. The song in the beginning is an instrumental version of Very Well I Know, which gives it that nice spooky sound. And the song at the end is Who. Both songs are on his fantastic album, Square One. You can find it on Amazon, Spotify, iTunes, YouTube, anywhere you find and buy music. I have it on my Spotify, and I also have it on my Amazon Music. I also bought 2 CDs, and I have it on my MP3 player. Yes, I'm that old. I have an MP3 player and CDs, haha. But I have it on Spotify, which is great, and I downloaded it, right? So I listen to it. I love to listen to it when I work out. The songs really are motivating, and they are upbeat. And it's a really fantastic album. I can't say enough good things about it. Also want to thank my husband, Doug, who designed the logos for this podcast, as well as the podcast Off Kilter, No Filter. Off Kilter, No Filter is a podcast with me and Byron Alexander, where we discuss everything and anything. Our latest episode will be uploaded tomorrow, actually, where we begin a conversation about video games. You know, the video games that we like. He and I, there's quite a bit of an age difference between the two of us, me being the elder. So, of course, my video game experience goes back to the 1980s, his more to the 1990s, which is cool, right? Different perspectives. That's what I love about it. So check that out, and then the following week we'll finish up with our part 2. Love to hear about your favorite video games and so on. Come listen on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, any other place that you get podcasts. I promise you it's there. And give us 5 stars on Apple Podcast. So back to Enriqueta Marti. Got to find out why she's called a vampire Barcelona, right? Because I want to know. So here we go. Enriqueta continued to sell her potions, elixirs. You know, she got out of jail, right? So she goes back to her apartment, and she's still selling those potions, elixirs, all that kind of shit to wealthy women, okay? Because again, there's no regulations for this. None at all. This also is a time when rumors start circulating about more and more children being missing. Most of them were like poor waifs, orphans, you know, definitely people... children of the poor. So people were also becoming angry, though, because nobody was doing anything about it. So, like, you know, you could put posters up if you wanted to, walk around asking if anybody had seen your kid, and nobody was doing shit, unless, of course, you have a lot of money, right? Then on February 10th, 1912, and, you know, these are kids that are as young as 3, sometimes upwards of 12, and I think this one was between the ages of 9 and 12. February 10th, 1912, Teresita Guitart Congost was reported missing by her middle-class parents, so that makes a difference right there. She's middle-class. The authorities actually searched for this kid for like 2 weeks. Then they got a tip. A neighbor of Enriqueta's, her name was Claudia Elias, told a mattress maker friend that she saw a young girl fitting Teresita's description in the window at Enriqueta's, and then, you know, was yelled at by Enriqueta to get away from the window. Well, Claudia knew Enriqueta had no children. The mattress maker told a municipal agent Jose Ascens, who then told the chief of the Ribault Brigade, you know, the police, basically. All right. So the police raided Enriqueta's apartment on February 27th. They found two girls. One of them was Teresita. Yay. Enriqueta said she had found Teresita the day before, like on February 26th, but Claudia had told the mattress maker about seeing Teresita 5 days before that, actually. So they knew she was lying about that. Enriqueta also said that the other girl, Angelita, was her own, even though Claudia and all the others said that Enriqueta had no children of her own. Well, the police interviewed the girls, of course. Teresita said Enriqueta had lured her toward the apartment with promises of sweets. Kids, don't follow that. Don't do that. This is back before, you know, stranger danger and telling you, hey, you know what? if somebody tells you they got candy for you, do not take that candy. Or look for their puppy or anything else. But anyway, nobody told Teresita that. So she's following Enriqueta, and then she realizes she's pretty far away from home and asks to be taken back home. Well, that's when Enriqueta put like a shirt or a bag or something over her head and forced her up to her apartment. There, she cut Teresita's hair, told her she had no parents anymore, and that now Teresita was to call her, Enriqueta, Mama. And then she changed Teresita's name to Felicidad. Okay, there's that. Now, while they're talking to the police, both girls said that Enriqueta only fed them stale bread and, you know, nasty potatoes. And they were often left alone, but they were forbidden to go near the windows, the balcony, or any of the other rooms in the apartment, and there were several other rooms. This was not a tiny, you know, little tiny apartment. This was a fairly decent-sized place that she had. Angelita, the other little girl, who was, again, they're like between 9 and 12. They told the police, Angelita told the police there had been a 5-year-old boy that lived there called Pepito. That had lived there before Teresita had arrived. Angelita said that she saw Enriqueta stab Pepito to death. I'm going to quote her. Quote, Mama did not realize that I saw her take Pepito, put him on the dining table, and kill him. End quote. When the police interviewed Enriqueta, she said that Angelita was her child from her marriage to Pujalo. When he heard this, Pujalo went to the police and told them that they had had no children, that she was lying, that they had had no children together. So, come to find out, she had stolen the child from Pujalo's sister, okay? So what had happened was she was there helping attend the birth, which is often, you know, what family members do. And then she took the baby. She lied to her sister-in-law, told her that the baby was stillborn, and then she left with the baby. When asked about Pepito, Enriqueta said that she had been caring for him because his parents couldn't, and that she had sent him to the countryside because he was ill. Well, the newspaper carried that story, and most of them were under the headline the mysteries of Barcelona. A peasant woman from a different town said she had arrived in Barcelona with a baby about 6 years earlier. She said she had sat down on a doorstep and a woman approached her. A woman who looked like Enriqueta. The woman offered to buy the peasant woman a glass of milk and hold the child for her. While the peasant woman was drinking the milk, the woman offered to get her some bread. She left with the baby and never came back. So, you know, she's holding the baby. I'll hold the baby for you. Here's some milk. Hey, you want me to get you some bread? And then she just walks away and never comes back. Different times back then, I guess, right? For you to say, oh, sure, stranger, hold my baby. Go get me some bread while you're holding my baby. After the interviews, the police searched the apartment further. They found a bag of bloody clothes and a bloody bony knife. They found another bag with supposedly bones of children. More children's clothes were found in other bags behind all these false walls. In another room, the police found pitchers and wash basins filled with blood, fat, bones, and hair. They also found jars containing finished beauty products. An ancient book was found. A recipe book written supposedly by Enriqueta was also found, and it was written in supposedly a code. Enriqueta owned several other properties, including two other apartments, a house where remains of children were supposedly found buried in the garden, you know, as young as like 3, and another house that belonged to her, the Marti family. The other apartments supposedly had false walls that were hiding more jars and body parts. False walls like the other one, but this time they're actually body parts. This is weird to me. Okay. Anyway, the police seized everything, including a list of clients for the products, as well as for prostitution. Enriqueta said she would find children for clients who were pedophiles. Okay. So she admits that. She also stated that the women she made beauty products And TB products for knew where she got the ingredients. And, you know, so her mind is like, who's the worst? The one that's supplying it or the one that knowingly buys it? I think fucking both. Just saying. To me, I think fucking both. But anyway, again, you know, children's blood and fat was thought to keep, you know, wealthy woman young. Again, God, that's such a throwback to, like, you know, to, like, Elizabeth Bathory. We've never gotten around to her, and I really need to. You know, she's a Hungarian noblewoman who supposedly killed all her servants to bathe in their blood. I love that one. But anyway, Enriqueta was arrested, but the trial kept getting pushed back, so she just kind of hung out in prison for a while. She tried to commit suicide by slashing her wrists with a wooden knife. I guess you could do it, you know, depending on how sharp that wood was, right? After that, she had three cellmates who were paid to keep an eye on her. Then, on May 12, 1913, it was announced that she had died from a long illness. Rumor says, though, that her cellmates were paid by the wealthy that were on her lists, you know, the wealthy women as well as the men, you know, the pedophiles, and that they hung her. Well, the official death certificate, though, says it was uterine cancer. Enriqueta never confessed to killing anyone. She did confess to the prostituting of a 17-year-old. And then, of course, some of the other crazy things that she said as far as, like, you know, about the women knowing about what she was supposedly doing. But she never like, fully admitted to killing any of these children. So here's the questions, right? Because these older ones especially, you know, that are over 100 years old and stuff like that, sometimes there's a lot of questions that I have about this. Because, honestly, you know, the press isn't always up front with this, right? So looking at newspapers and that kind of stuff, of course, police reports aren't held. It's in a different language, all that kind of stuff. So I'm curious, though, uterine cancer makes sense. So if they're finding a lot of bloody clothing and it's not children's size necessarily, maybe it's hers. And maybe it is children's sizes. Maybe that's, I mean, think about the feminine products they had at the turn of the 20th century. It wasn't, you know, the sticky post-it in your underwear kind of things, right? It wasn't tampons, it was rags. So maybe, let's say you do find children's clothing, right? So you're using that as your rags, and you, if you have uterine cancer or that kind of problem, copious amounts of blood are usually an indication of that. So that could be where all the blood came from. As far as, like, you know, all the other items that they found, there's conjecture about that too. Again, I don't see any police reports, you know, from 1912, 1913 Spain, you know. She's probably a bit mentally ill, I would imagine. Also, a lot of women get mentally ill if they can't have children. So it's possible that she's stealing children, or, you know, she stole Angelita and she stole Teresita and this Pepito baby. You know, maybe she did kill him. Maybe she didn't. Maybe she did send him to the country. There's no resolution to this. They just kind of take everything at face value. Again, turn of the century Spain. I don't know about their laws. I don't know how good they are at, you know, following up. She's a crazy lady that, you know, everybody wants to believe is killing, you know, children. It's possible. Maybe this is all true. Maybe it is. You know, they found body parts and all this other kind of stuff. Maybe, you know, again, who knows, though, right? In the end, though, you know, she did confess to the crime of teenage prostitution. So either way, Enriqueta Martí was a woman committing crimes. All right, so that's it for us for today. Thank you so much for listening to Stamina. And it was some Spanish music like I started it. If you have a comment, question, or a suggestion for an episode, you can email me at womencommittingcrimes@gmail.com or comment on the website at womencommittingcrimes.com. I will even read your email or comments on the podcast. Tay-Tay Claire did not tell me not to, and it's out there in the public. So you know what? If it's out there in the public, it's going to be out there in the public. Unless you would rather remain anonymous, but then just tell me and I won't read it to anybody else, right? Please support this podcast. Go to anchor.fm/Elizabeth-Chase and click on the support button. Or, you know, you can just look up Women Committing Crimes. It'll take you right there, right? You can make a one-time donation or sponsor on a monthly basis. It would be greatly appreciated. Please give this podcast 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, you know, or not. Again, I would like your feedback. I was really appreciative. Even though, you know, Tay-Tay didn't like it necessarily, I'm fine with that. I am. At least they listened twice, right? All right. So make it your favorite you know, others on other sites, give it a thumbs up and so on. I'm on all of them, including iHeartRadio. So give us fantastic ratings, please. All right. Some Spanish music. Yeah? All right. Let's go into the fishbowl. All right. Let's pull one out. Oh, it's about time. All right. This one's from Russia. I'm excited because we haven't gone over there yet, right? We've been to the Czech Republic. Don't get me wrong. But Czech Republic is not Russia. All right. So we're going to go to Russia. And we are going to talk about Sofia Ivanova Blyovishtin. I like that. Sofia Ivanova Blyovishtin, a con artist and robber. I'm looking forward to that. Haven't done a con artist and robber in a while. Child killing. As interesting as that is, I swear, sometimes it's nice to do robbery and stuff like that, right? All right, so I will talk to you in 2 weeks. Today is May 12th. I will be sending this out today. Then the next time we will talk again on May 25th. Y'all have a terrific day. See you then. Bye-bye.